Today on the Travel Guys.
In the travel news, Boeing's MAX jets are back in the sky. As a traveler, would you be nervous about flying on one? And protesters strand tourists, keep them from getting to Machu Picchu in Peru. Those stories and more next in the news.
You're considering taking a cruise. Your friends say they'd like to go too. Well, how can you make sure that the planning goes smoothly and you're still have those same friends after the cruise? Well, in our Smarter Traveler segment at 11:20, we talk about the importance of proper planning, especially when traveling with friends and family.
The president has been after junk fees since last year's State of the Union address. Here we are a year later, and not much has changed. His latest mission, getting families seated together on planes without additional charges. We'll talk about it at 11:35.
Searchers think they found Amelia Earhart's plane, and a congressman wants private screening for him and other lawmakers at the airport. But turns out it's all about him. Those stories in our odds and ends section coming up at 11:50.
Updates on the top travel stories and information to make you a smarter traveler. Welcome to the latest edition of The Travel Guys.
On the road again.
Welcome, everyone, to another edition of the Travel and Entertainment Guys, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Thanks for joining us here on a fabulous Saturday morning. Mark, good to have you here with us. I understand that you have a little trip to San Jose. How's that working out for you?
Yeah, I did know the way to San Jose, it turned out, and down here on some business this weekend. Let me just tell you something. Can I offer an upfront word of wisdom? I hate to use the very top of the show to get off of Sunbuddy's bandwagon, but if you ever come to San Jose, this hotel is very that I'm staying at is very close to the airport. It's the DoubleTree Hotel. If you ever come to San Jose or you know anybody who's coming here and they're looking for a hotel to stay in, don't stay at the DoubleTree.
Oh, gee.
The place is falling apart. It's not very clean. It's overpriced. The food is overpriced. Did I mention that parking is $30 a day?
Ooh.
Which wouldn't be so bad if this was the Ritz-Carlton or the Marriott Marquis, but it's a DoubleTree, for God's sake, that happens to be reasonably close to the airport. This is really not – this hotel offers no value proposition to its guests on any level. So I just wanted to share that, my poor experience here at the DoubleTree. It's just – and truly, it's the third year in a row I've been down here for this business conference. I've stayed in this hotel, and I swear every year I will not come back here. But next year, I will not come back here. DoubleTree Hotel San Jose, I don't recommend it to anybody.
Well, there you go. And at the top of every Travel Guys radio show, besides that, we bring you up to date on what's been going on in the travel news. And with today's travel news, here's Mark. Mark.
Yeah. Don't get Mark too pissed off at you because he's got a radio show and he might go on and tell a whole bunch of people that, you know, you don't do your job well. Anyways, in the headlines, we talked about tourists being stranded after protests in Peru have blocked access to Machu Picchu. Most of the tourists that are blocked who wanted to have access, not that they're stuck there. But, of course, thousands of people every day visit Machu Picchu in Peru from all over the world. These protests blocked the train tracks. So that made it impossible for people to get there. It's an indefinite strike, they say. Tour operators and local authorities have no idea how long it's going to last. The other thing is that it may turn into wildcat strikes where unannounced, suddenly the train doesn't run one day. So if you are headed to Machu Picchu, you need to be aware of this. One of the reasons it's happening is because they're moving the ticketing to a new platform this month, and it's going to change the way visitor numbers are managed. and local people feel like it's going to eliminate them from the ticket selling process and some other opportunities to produce revenue for themselves. So this is kind of a delicate situation. We'll see how it works out. But the point is that if you're planning a trip to Machu Picchu in Peru the next couple of months, that you need to do your homework, keep on top of this to make sure that you know if you will be able to get up there or not. Boeing 737 MAX 9 airplanes are back in the sky. You notice they've been back in the sky now for a week or so. None of them have fallen to the ground. No planes have had to return to the airport from not having a door properly. Can you believe that, Tom? They say that the door, that the some of the bolts were never attached to that door.
Oh, man, and that really is what it turned out to be. You know, that was speculation early on. And with all the checks and balances and double checks and triple checks, that's hard to believe.
Yeah, it is kind of. I mean, it does it bother me as a traveler? It does. Would I get on a MAX 9 plane? Yeah, I would. I think this was a one-off incident. And if anything, it has really emphasized Boeing may have some quality control issues here. And since a lot of people fly on those planes, it's not like when your car breaks down at the side on the side of the road. When your plane breaks down on the side of the sky, that can be a little bit of a problem. So thank goodness the FAA is stepping up their oversight process at the Boeing manufacturing plants and their subsidiary plants, some of the suppliers that supply parts to Boeing aircraft. But in particular, they are overseeing the Boeing plant in Seattle, and the FAA is concerned. So if they're going to take a look at it, that's enough for me for now. As long as we don't see any other planes falling out of the sky. I think I asked you this last week, Tom, but I asked you if you would fly on one of these aircraft.
Yeah, you know, well, it didn't fall out of the sky, just parts of it fell out. Here again, it's always the same thing. I always feel more secure after a situation when they button things up and they're really looking at things real hard. Probably the safest time to fly in one of those planes would be now.
Yes, I would agree with that assessment of things. I'm hoping that the feds keep a close eye. Listen, Boeing is no different than any other business. Lots of businesses cut corners and do things to save money. And people sit down in a room and they say, well, you know, how does this impact our customers? And somebody decides that it doesn't impact them all that much. And they opt for the money saving method. It's entirely possible that Boeing has cut some corners. Maybe some oversight will help. The CEO seems to be fairly genuine in his public comments, so that's a start. At least he's not denying that anything happened. But I would fly on the aircraft. The airlines are reporting that they've had a few cancellations, but nothing of any magnitude. And the planes have been back in the sky, not only in the United States, but also the overseas carriers that are using them. Outside international carriers have got their planes back in the sky also. I guess this is a story that we'll just have to follow. Hey, here's a cool idea. If you're we should get this at the Sacramento airport. If you're flying out of Columbus or Cincinnati, you can now have your car parked at the airport. And of course, you know, you're running up these daily parking fees and you're not using your car for anything. What if you could get things like an oil change or detailing work or, you know, tires changed or rotated or whatever it was that you needed on your car while it was sitting at the airport? In Columbus and in Cincinnati now, they have a company that will work on your vehicle while you're on the road. They'll also wash your car, clean the interior, perform basic maintenance tasks like oil changes. It seems like a very efficient use of time to me. However, there's one thing that makes me hesitant on this, and that is that anybody who operates a concession at an airport, the reason that food prices and gasoline prices at the ARCO station in Sacramento Airport are so high is because those businesses are paying a fee to the airport for the right to do business there. And that cost of doing business is what drives up the prices. So I'm wondering if the fees that this company is charging at these two airports to perform services on people's cars while they're sitting there, is that You know, are those jacked up too?
Yeah, yeah.
Or did they somehow escape that?
Yeah, no. More than likely, it's going to be higher. But a lot of people would say, hey, you know, it's the convenience. Doing the math on that, they're going to have to come and round up your car from a parking lot or whatever. Or do you? Well, let's not get into that. It does make sense that it's going to be a little more pricey. Maybe we should find out what that price is and find out whether it makes sense. But it's a clever idea.
I'll put our crack staff of several dozen road reporters on that, and we'll get it. Yeah, or I'll make a phone call or two next week. Here's something I wanted to warn people about. This is a headline from Mia Taylor, who is a friend of the Travel Guys. And she reports on Travel Pulse that during the week last week on Wednesday, Lufthansa had to scrap several hundred of flights amid a 27-hour labor strike at five airports across Germany. The reason that this is important is, one, labor actions in overseas countries, particularly in London and Germany, tend to be wildcat things, spur of the moment, one day here, one day there. Sometimes they'll announce at the beginning of the month, a union will, that, hey, we're going to strike the airports or the transit system or whatever on this date and this date and this date. And sometimes you only get a couple days notice. Lots of times international travelers are connecting in England or Germany, and those connections can be impacted, and the services at the airports can be impacted by these strikes. So it once again comes down to, and I hate to say this because we already started with the story about Machu Picchu, but really and truly, the smart traveler, especially in this day and age of technology, there's just no excuse for not sitting down at a computer for 10 or 15 or 30 minutes or an hour, depending on where it is you're going. I mean, you know, if you're flying to Los Angeles, that's one thing. That only requires a certain amount of homework. Of course, after the flooding this past week, maybe a little more. But if you're flying overseas, you need to be able to – you need to go on and find out, you know, type in wildcat strikes in Germany if you're connecting somewhere on Lufthansa or something like that, so that you can at least be informed and know what's going on. But wildcat strikes in foreign countries that impact travel services are not unheard of, and they are oftentimes – this one was not – but they are oftentimes scheduled for peak periods of time, because if you're a union and you're trying to make your point, the most inconvenience you can cause people and the most money you can cost the parent company, the easier it is perhaps to make your point. Here's another thing. This is hotel parking fees. You heard me at the top of the program railing about the $30 parking fees at the DoubleTree Hotel in San Jose. Now, Chris Elliott reports that some hotels are adding a parking. You know how they add the resort fee to your bill, Tom? And, you know, it's a free exercise facility and internet,
right,
and 50% off a bicycle rental and two bottles of bottled water and 15% off in the gift shop, none of which many people ever use, or items that used to be free. Well, now the hotels have got a new trick. Now some hotels that are charging for parking are charging people for parking whether they have a car or not.
Oh, no. Oh, well, you know, it's not our fault you didn't bring your car.
Exactly. Exactly. Couple of instances here where people have reported that they are being charged mandatory fees for parking. And Chris Elliott points out that unless the hotel mentioned these fees sometime during the booking time, even like they throw those resort fees in on the very last page, if they didn't mention it at all, you are under no obligation to pay the fees.
Thank you very much.
So, I mean, if you park there, you have to pay them.
Well, sure.
But this garbage about charging people parking fees at a hotel, and the way people are finding out about it is when they go to check out or the bill appears on their credit card. You know, I mean, like, I'm here for three nights, so it's going to cost me $90 to park at this hotel. So certainly if they charge me and I wasn't expecting it and my credit card bill came in the better part of $100 over, I would notice it. So just beware that some hotels indeed are now starting to charge for parking even when you don't park a car. That's almost as unbelievable of a story of people thinking that the Super Bowl is fixed.
Yeah.
So, all right. Anyways, that's it. Hotels charging for parking with phantom cars. And that's your travel news for today.
And we are the Travel Guys. Don't forget travelguysradio.com. Links to all of our special guests and so much more can be found there. Mark, I know that we've been talking about Rudy's having the Travel Guys special, which, by the way, is still going on. $29.95 for a 6-ounce lobster tail with all the fixins. By the way, you put that ad in your newsletter. I was there today, and I heard from one of the servers there that she wanted to remind you have such detailed travelers that travel with you that get your newsletter. Some of them actually clipped it out and took it with them to the restaurant. And says, "Hey, I want to get the Travel Guy special here. Here's the coupon. I just want to let your traveler everybody know you don't have to have mm-hmm. the clip out coupon or anything from the newsletter. You just go to Rudy's and tell them you want the Travel Guy special, which is super super special for $29.95 for the 6-ounce lobster and the rice pilaf and the vegetables and the butter and the sourdough. So, and don't forget, Rudy's does catering if you want to have a party. If you want crab, they've always got it for you. Rudy's Hideaway right off of Highway 50 at Hazel.
But I wanted to talk about something. Our friends at Travelers United brought this up in a post last week. Talking about going on a cruise. And many people say, well, hey, you know, the couple, they're going on a cruise and the couple from across the street is over and they're talking about it. And it's like, well, heck, you know, we'd love to go to South America also on a cruise. Why don't we join you? And it sounds like a great idea and you immediately start planning. But there really are some things. Cruises are a little bit different from hotel-based vacations, which allow you a little bit more freedom and the like. If you've got somebody on a cruise ship, and let's say they're a follower and not a joiner. They're the kind of people who depend on other people to kind of, oh, where are you going? Oh, okay, we'll go with you.
No, please.
And then you can't get rid of those people at any point in time.
Yep.
If they like to stay up late and party and sleep in late in the morning and that's not your style, then that's going to cause a little bit of conflict perhaps because these folks are going to want to go to the showroom and they're going to want to have a couple of cocktails afterwards and stay up late, and that may not necessarily be your thing. The reason I mention these things is because they are all potential reasons for conflict, not only during the cruise, but something that could really put a damper on a friendship. So if you get into a situation like this where some close friends that you haven't cruised with before, or family would be the same thing. You know, you put together a family group of 4, 6, or 8, or 15, or 20 people, and just make sure that you've thought about all the different people that are joining the cruise, and especially people who have not been on a cruise before. Because if you're a regular cruiser, you know about ships and you know some of the ins and outs and things like that. So perhaps it would be your role to get the folks who are going together at some point in time and kind of do a little bit of a pre-cruise orientation. Maybe that happens even before you book the cabins and you talk about the itinerary and you make sure that people understand that, you know, I told people last week we're talking about Key West. Don't visit Key West on a cruise ship stop and think you visited Key West, because 4 hours isn't going to begin to touch it. And when cruise ships are in town, it's more crowded in most of the popular places. That's going to be the case in many places. So make sure that somebody whose dream it is to visit Charleston, South Carolina, doesn't book the cruise and find out they're only going to be there for 4 hours. And then they're mad at you because why didn't you tell me that? So it's just a word of wisdom. If you're the person who is the organizer or the planner or the homework person, one way that you can make sure that all of these folks will talk to you when you get back home is to get them all together and share a few of the things. What's your style? Are you an early riser? Are you a late riser? Do you eat 3 meals a day? Or are you a drinker, a non-drinker? Some of these things you'll know about your friends and your family before you start, but it doesn't hurt to have a conversation. Maybe if you all live in different cities, you do it on FaceTime or something like that, so that everybody can kind of pitch in and see, and you don't get into this, hey, these three people decided something and these four people don't really want to do that, and how could they decide that without talking to us, and all that back and forth. So I just really tell folks, cruises are different. And for people who haven't been on a cruise before, they may have certain perceptions of what you can and cannot do. And if you are an experienced cruiser and you're the kind of the group organizer, then you can help this. You can also advise friend, other members of the family and your friends, you know, not to arrive on the day of the cruise, not to plan an activity on the day the ship is departing that gets you to the port, you know, 2 hours before the ship is going to sail, because if something goes wrong, you could miss it. I mean, the internet is littered with stories like this, which is why Ned Levy at Travelers United chose to pick this subject.
I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is. And I bet you if we opened the lines and said, hey, tell us your traveling with friends nightmare story, we could do more than one show.
Again, this is why I suggest doing this before you have booked the cruise. You know, you get together, you have a brainstorming session. You know, somebody says, hey, maybe we go to South America, and somebody else says Europe. And so you get together and you work that out, and everybody feels like it was a group decision that we went to X place. Somebody doesn't sign up for the cruise already with a chip on their shoulder of how could you have made such a horrible decision, or I didn't know that it didn't stop in you know, Venice or Barcelona or whatever. Or sometimes cruise lines will stop in a city and you have to bus an hour to the attraction city. And so that has to be taken into account of. Many times on cruise ship stops, you have time to do one thing. Take one tour, go to one attraction, do one thing big, or have some free time on your own. Really things that you should talk about with people that you're going to travel with before you've made huge commitments.
I will take that advice to heart, because there are people that would like to, you know, go on little holidays together. But like I say, you better do your homework, better talk it out ahead of time. You know, there's been the president's been in the news a lot lately, Mark. They've been giving him the jabbing him pretty hard about his memory and his ability to remember things. You don't think he forgot to move forward with this helping us get rid of these junk fees and such, do you?
I don't know, but you know, this is just a real quick political commentary here. We have two older gentlemen running for president that will both be well into their 80s when their term ends. And I'm not, without going into the qualifications of either person, that makes me slightly nervous on both ends. So I also think that the world is changing incredibly rapidly. I know as a person who has watched all of this technology evolve and stuff like that, I sometimes yield to younger people, not sometimes, regularly yield to younger folks, and who can, you know, help me solve a problem, or to whom something with technology is intuitive, and to me it's not. So I just think about having a man running the country who's that far detached from all of that age-wise, and I just wonder about the wisdom of that. Never mind the politics about the two different people. I just wonder about the wisdom of the age detachment in this age of technology. Anyways, the president last year in his State of the Union, which is coming up again in a couple of weeks, he railed on airlines and hotels and resorts and people who charge junk fees. And he said, you know, let's go after these people. And he got pretty much ignored. And he's mentioned it a couple of times in the interim, and he's been pretty much ignored again. These people make a lot of money off of these fees, and they have a lot of lobbying power in Washington, D.C. So when a political figure stands up and says, hey, let's change A, the people who support A come out in big numbers and say, we don't want this to happen, Mr. Congressman of ours, so please don't let it happen. And here's a nice contribution to your campaign or whatever that might be. And if you think that's not the way it works, I have some news for you. Now the president says fee-free family seating. Try to say that three times fast.
Wow.
He says that families, when they make a reservation, if they do it a reasonable time in advance, let's call it 60 days, 30 days, 21 days, whatever you want to say, that they should be guaranteed that they can sit together as a family on a plane without having to buy upgrade seating or beg somebody on the aircraft to change seats with them. And I can't say that I disagree with that. The only downside to this is that if, for example, Southwest lets people board between the A and B group, they have a child under the age of six in their family. I fly United. They let you pre-board if you have a child two and under. It's been my observation that if people have a child under 8 or 10, they take advantage of that pre-boarding situation. It's not policed real heavily. So with Southwest, that would mean more people boarding ahead of the B and C groups. Obviously, it's important for families to sit together, but I'm just the reality of the situation is that you get a stink eye from all the people who are boarding behind you when you start doing pre-boarding of groups on planes. And in some cases, my God, it seems as though I'm sure to people who are standing there that, good Lord, they're pre-boarding half of the aircraft. What I thought was going to be a really good boarding number on Southwest or boarding group on one of the other carriers is not working out that way. So I wish the president well on his drive to get airlines to offer fee-free family seating. But I question whether or not he will have any better success with this than he did with getting rid of junk fees last year.
It just seems that, you know, it's so hard. We talk about it, and, you know, we've got people working on it in Congress and so forth, but things happen so slow.
You would think a lot of times what happens with congressional action is when the congressional people, and I've got an example of this in the next segment, when congressional people are themselves impacted by something, then they go, oh, I get it. And now suddenly they've changed their minds about whatever the topic is. And it seems to me that Congress people stay in hotels and travel a lot and stuff, they certainly must run into these fees, or maybe they don't, and only their staffs run into them because they don't, you know, they're not booking things and paying for things themselves. But it just
probably
the family free. I can see getting families together on the plane. I think, though, that you can't tell somebody who bought a ticket an hour and a half before the plane left and all the seats were taken that he gets to get his family together on the plane. I think that you have to have some reasonable guidelines and some deadlines and some things that you can get all the airlines to agree to. And it doesn't seem like it certainly should be easier than getting rid of junk fees. You ought to be able to get the major area airlines to agree that, hey, if the family books more than 30 days in advance, the reason it has to be a little ways out is because the planes get full. And now you've got a family of four or six or eight, and you need to get those people all together. You can't expect other people who have picked and in many cases paid for seating to arbitrarily move or put the airline in a position where they have to move people, because that just causes problems. So you need to set a deadline out far enough that and you need to police it in a way that makes sure that, you know, the people who are receiving this privilege are people who are qualified to receive the privilege. And then I think it will be much better received by the general public. And I think there's an opportunity maybe for this one to get a little further than the last idea that came out of the White House. More and more travelers are visiting every country in the world. CNN travel reports some are having second thoughts about it. And for a variety of reasons, you know, visiting every country in the world takes a lot of time and a lot of money. And also there's this thing called an uncomfortable reality that you're going to encounter in a lot of these countries. So what they're suggesting in this story is kind of the theme of this program, and that is pick an adventure to 8 or 10 or 12 or 15 different countries. Do your homework to make sure that you've picked countries that are socially and culturally compatible with you, so that wherever it is that you're going, that you're going to be welcome and accepted there. And concentrate on a journey like that. And once you come back, you will have learned innumerable things that you can apply to your next journey to 8 or 10 or 12 countries. Or you may just have decided that, you know what, this is a little bit much. Maybe we can ask Chris Elliott. He's been on the road for, what, 3 years, Tom?
Yeah, I'm pretty close to that. Yeah.
Yeah.
He would be a perfect person to talk about that with. Chris does seem to do his homework quite regularly, and of course his travel is relative to the kind of work he does, but yeah, I think great advice. That's amazing that people, it seems that people want to travel more and more, and particularly to foreign countries.
Yeah, yeah. And if you've only traveled to three or four foreign countries in your life, and making it your goal, I mean, I'd love to say that I've seen a ball game in every ballpark, but that doesn't mean that I'm planning a trip to 30 major league ballparks all in one trip. So maybe that's a way to think about it. But anyways, and it, sometimes smaller numbers can be better. Also, if you're traveling with a companion or something like that, what if you get out there and you're planning on visiting 120 countries and on country three you have a falling out? My goodness, that's a lot of things to unwind. So maybe doing it in sections. All right, one more thing here before we take our middle of the half hour break. This also comes from our friend Chris Elliott at his website at elliott.org, two L's and two T's. Chris being a consumer advocate. He talks a little bit about refunds and talks about this on a regular basis, but I thought this one little tip was really important. It was somebody who was owed an airline refund and owed it for a long time, had called people on the phone and sent emails. And Chris said, look, you've got to send them to the right person. He has at Elliott.org, he has a list of major contacts for many of the major travel companies in the country. He says, when you're not getting a response, you send these people an email. It's polite. You wait 2 weeks. You send them another email. Again, you are polite. But in the second email, you let them know that if you don't hear a response, that here are the other measures that you're going to take. And then 2 weeks later, you follow up a third time with an email. All of these going hypothetically to people above the general customer service level. And that way you've got this paper trail where you, and he says, look, if 2 weeks have gone by and they haven't answered you, don't sit there and think that, you know, you've just fallen to the bottom of the stack and that they'll get to you soon, because you may have fallen to the bottom of the stack, or you may be out of the stack altogether. Or the other possibility is that there's nobody tending to the stack. So Chris says 3 letters, 2 weeks apart, to the head honchos, once you've pleaded your case to the great unwashed. And if at that point in time you don't get an answer, why, then it's time to take some legal action or do something else. But Chris says, especially those first couple of follow-ups, you don't necessarily want to be threatening people with things you're going to do. Just state your case, why you're owed a refund, and that you expect them to contact you about it. And then wait to see what happens. A little bit of wisdom for you there from our friend Chris Elliott.
And, you know, and Chris, by the way, Chris has contacts. He can get you phone numbers and email addresses to people at the top of a lot of important companies if you need help finding who it is that you need to reach out to.
And also, Chris, on occasion, they will take on selective cases from people, and he has a small team of consumer advocates who work on behalf of his nonprofit. And so if you have a travel problem or situation, not just a question, but if you have a situation where somebody didn't deliver what they were supposed to deliver, or again, you're awaiting a refund, and company A is, you booked it through, let's out of the clear blue, booking.com or whatever, and they booked it on United Airlines, and booking.com says, hey, you know, your refund is coming, and it never comes. And they say, well, you know, United, it's actually supposed to come from United Airlines, and we've told them to send you the money, but we don't know why they haven't sent it to you. And so sometimes Chris can cut through that red tape, but his point here just is that if you want to cut through the red tape on your own, that there are ways to do that. And he in particular, I'm glad you emphasized that, Tom, on his website has a lot of the people that you should be sending those letters to. And in many cases, he reports that people follow those instructions and plead their own case to the higher ups and get a solution, which after all is all any of us who have an issue are looking for. We're not looking for an argument or a long drawn out delay. We just would like a resolution to whatever issue it is that we have.
All right, Mark, let's jump into our final segment. Let's talk about, first of all, what's the deal with Amelia Earhart's plane? Have they found it?
Yeah, this is kind of interesting. Those folks who have been on the planet for a few years, this is a story that has come up before where people thought that maybe they have found the plane. And in this case, the reason this group thinks they may have found it is using sonar imaging for mapping the ocean floor. Miss Earhart's plane had some very significant design factors on it. And so they believe that they have found the plane based on the design of the and the shape of the aircraft that they that this is the plane. It doesn't appear to be any place. For those of you who don't know the story, she was going to fly around the world. She took off and her plane disappeared while flying over the Pacific Ocean on the first part of the journey. And nobody has ever been able to solve the problem, solve the mystery of where the plane went down. She was never found. The plane has never been found. Of course, there are lots of stories about how she, you know, crashed on a Pacific island and, you know, and no one ever found her and all of those kinds of things. But this is kind of interesting. And it's possible that her aircraft was a Lockheed Electra, and it had twin engines on it, and it also had very uniquely shaped wings, especially the rear wing, for those of you who are familiar with aircraft. So there is a number that's printed on the underside of the missing plane's wing. So if the plane were to be uncovered in the ocean, where the temperatures are very cold and there's very low oxygen content, it's very possible that the plane could be well enough preserved that if you could get a look at the underside of that wing, you might indeed be able to determine whether or not it was her aircraft. So that's kind of a cool story.
Pretty fascinating, yeah. I like that stuff.
Yeah, it is. There was a History Channel documentary in 2017 had the theory that Earhart and her engineer had crashed about 1,000 miles away from a place called Howland Island, where they were captured and taken to another island, held hostage, and eventually died. The theory was based off of a photo from the National Archives that featured several blurry images, blurry figures. Investigators claim the aviator and her plane were in the image. I'm looking at a picture of the picture now, and I'm not sure how you could determine that from that picture. But an 87-year-old aviation mystery, and it still goes on. The curator of General Aviation for the Smithsonian National Air and Space Museum in Washington, D.C., says the new sonar image of the proposed missing aircraft is of particular interest because of the anomaly's proximity to this place called Howland Island. So it appears as though maybe they might be on track to find out where Amelia Earhart went down. Okay, this second story, Tom, is very different from the first one. This is a gentleman. He is known by some folks in Texas who probably don't vote for him as Cancun Ted or Cancun Cruz. It's this story is a little bit about Senator Ted Cruz. A couple of years ago, during a very bad storm in Texas that was really impacting the state, he snuck off to Cancun. And
it wasn't that long ago.
Just a couple of years ago. And right. Some people in the airport recognized him and took some pictures and posted them online. And Mr. Cruz got to Cancun and turned around and came right back. So because he apparently saw the political – he's a seasoned politician. He apparently saw the political downside of that. Anyway, he has suggested – he has proposed in a bill that politicos, higher-up politicos like him – would receive private escorts by security through the airport, and they would be screened in private areas. So this means that this would solve his problem from sneaking off to Cancun in that nobody would know when he had was gone and nobody could take his picture in the airport. He does make a point that there are some security issues with congressional representatives and senators and stuff like that, and I wouldn't necessarily argue that, but it's just kind of interesting that this gentleman who has a history of trying to sneak through and get out of the country now proposes legislation that would allow him indeed to sneak through and get out of the country. So it's kind of, and you know, it doesn't matter which team some of these political people play for. It's sometimes they get up there and they think that, you know, maybe the system ought to cater to them a little bit more than it does. And frankly, I've run into a number of people going through security at airports and at Amtrak, ran into the man who at the time was vice president, who is now our president at the Amtrak station in Washington, D.C. I've sat next to celebrity people on airplanes and stuff like that. And I found it to be a fascinating experience. I try not to bother them too much unless they're responsive. I remember sitting on a flight up to Seattle next to B.J. Thomas, the vocalist,
cool,
a few years ago. And he was the nicest man. And I sort of recognized him. And when he started talking to the flight attendant, who obviously recognized him, then it was like, okay, I know who this is. And I just said, Mr. Thomas, I just want you to know I really am a fan of your music and don't mean to bother you or anything, but just wanted to share that. And then he started a conversation, you know, really, what are a couple of your favorite songs? And we got to talking about family and friends and flying and travel and all that kind of stuff, and had probably a 30-minute conversation on the aircraft that I felt was it was not only enjoyable and entertaining, but help to pass the time. So I get Mr. Cruz's concerns about having to publicly pass through security and stuff like that. But all I can say to some of these political figures is, you know, you used to be one of us, and someday you will be one of us again, and probably shouldn't forget that too much along the way. Again, no matter what team you play for, you need to remember that, you know, there are players on your team and there's a whole lot of us out here. So, and the other thing is, Ted, if you're going to fly on a public aircraft and you're going to board the airplane, I mean, do you want to be boarded separately downstairs from everybody else, you know, and nobody knows that you're on the plane? And I'm sure you're not going to sit in the back. So if you're in the front, a lot of people are going to get on the plane and recognize you there anyway. So I don't know. I don't. You have any comment on this, Mr. Romano?
No, I'm with you all the way, except for maybe they hit him up with some great resort fees that maybe he'd start fussing about. Maybe we should get rid of the resort fees, too.
Yes, sir. We are at the end of another Travel Guys radio show. Dance like nobody's watching. We'll talk to you next week.
Stay well, my friends. See you next time right here with the Travel Guys.